Good morning. Today is April 11th, 2017. It is 8:04 a.m. Members present include Representative Westlake, Representative Tallarico, Co-Chair Fensler, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Parrish. Assisting us today, we have Lori Rowland, House Records, Ben Manley, Teleconference, and my committee staff, Dana Owen. If all present would please silence their cell phones. We've got two items on today's calendar. We'll be accepting public testimony on House Bill 201, Municipal Regulation of Trapping. We'll not be taking action on this or the other bill today, only hearing public testimony. And we'll be taking public testimony on SB 64, Adopting Uniform Environmental Covenants Act. Representative Josephson, if you'd like to come forward and present on House Bill 201.
Thank you. I'm Andy Josephson, for the record, District 17. It's the University Medical Center in Anchorage. With me is Megan Rowe, my staff. And I appreciate you taking some time to hear this bill. A number of your committee sit on a committee that I co-chair. One of them has not yet joined your committee this morning. And they're familiar with House Bill 40, which was a comprehensive effort to, in a statewide fashion, offer some balance to trail users in the state of Alaska. There has been widespread and documented concern with traps placed near trails. And I don't think that anybody on the committee said there is no such evidence. No one said that, because there clearly was evidence of it. And I don't think anybody indicated that there wasn't some user conflicts, because there was tremendous amount of evidence of user conflicts all over the state, or significant parts of the state. What members of the committee did say was, and repeatedly and loudly, but politely, was that this should be a local matter, and that local governments should essentially be able to regulate trapping. So what I've done is I've crafted a bill, and I think that Ledge Legal always does meticulous work, but they spent a particular amount of time with this, that says that under Title 16, which is our Fish and Game Code, that there's nothing in that code that prevents a municipality from regulating the practice of trapping within its boundaries. And then it outlines the kinds of things in Section 2, including trap identification requirements, signage, restrictions on types of traps, and prohibitions on setting them near places where people can get injured or pets can get injured, are outlined, but not generally an outright ban. And some of this, by the way, there's been a legal dispute, and I've got invited testimony from the borough attorney in the Matsu Valley. It could very well be on the phone. His name is Nicholas Spiropoulos.
He is.
And there's another attorney who's an expert in this area named Neyland Taylor, who could very well be there. And I think there is some dispute about the authority of local governments to regulate trapping. Generally speaking, the authority is, I think most people agree, that it's greater if the municipality actually owns the land in question. So obviously municipalities like the Matsu Borough is larger than a lot of East Coast states, for sure, several put together. Presumably it would not want to too seriously regulate trapping when it's far removed from public use trails and lots of public use. But the municipality recently, that is the Matsu Borough, recently has concluded that I think it's about five or six public use areas / trails, that indeed those trails could be regulated and trapping could be proscribed because those are foundationally because the land in question is owned by the borough. Now, I think that you might hear Mr. Spropoulos say that the borough didn't just jump into this unabashedly and with absolute certainty that it could even regulate its own land, let alone its borders. But fundamentally, what we're seeing is that there are problems with traps near other public use areas, and the problem is that traps generally are sort of an exclusive use. That is, they do come down often in the summer or the spring, but when they're in the field, they occupy the field. And they can sometimes do so sort of in concert with other uses, but often when those other uses concern dogs, there are significant problems. So I've sort of offered this as an alternative to the legislature, partly because that's what I heard the Resources Committee talk about. And it was first referred to your committee, Mr. Co-Chair. And so that's why we're here. And I would note that the law on this matter, I'm looking at it, for example, it was given to you, the 1982 Attorney General opinion on this, is that the law is murky, that local governments cannot generally preempt state authority, but they can use powers over land management and management plans to do some regulation, but they have to find some sort of hook for which they could do it. So it's sort of under the same, excuse my voice, but it's sort of under the same reasoning as that, as sort of a public safety reasoning broadly, that you can't just fire a gun anywhere you want within a city. It's sort of that sort of reasoning that gets them there. But because the law is somewhat murky, I've offered this bill. And I appreciate your taking time, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. And then we have these callers.
Are there any questions from members of the committee at this time? Representative Sadler.
Good morning, sir. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, help me understand and clarify. I'm sorry, municipalities can regulate traffic within their borders now. Is that correct?
Well, that's through the chair. I think that it's unclear that they can do that. And the only Attorney General opinion on this says that as well. So you end up with broad views on this. So, for example, we know that the Constitution says to the maximum extent possible, local governments should have power over their own governments, that sort of thing. And then you have these competing interests where the Board of Game generally very broadly can regulate state trapping. And I just think that it's unclear, and I'm anxious to hear from both attorneys whether or not, for example, generally speaking, there's no trapping in the municipality of Anchorage. But I don't know if a state authority like the Board of Game insisted that there be some trapping, who would prevail.
Okay. Follow up with me.
Follow up.
And forgive me, I do not sit on resources through the chair to represent Josephson, so I have not heard this bill before. So a question is, I've read some popular press stories about this. Is what exactly is the problem that you're addressing? Is it pets being caught in traps who are on leashes or off leashes? And I'm going to raise the question of whether a dog or a cat or a raccoon or a pet ferret is on a leash, are they getting caught in a trap? Or if they're off leash, they're getting caught in a trap. What exactly is the problem we're addressing? We're seeking to address.
Through the chair, there are always concerns with hazards where there's no pet in question. So, for example, prior to the borough of the Mat-Su Borough's ordinance, and Mr. Spropoulos will know far more details about this, but you could have, and I think you probably still can have, because I think, again, he'll know more, you could have a trap right next to a schoolyard. And there would be nothing in the Mat-Su Borough to prohibit it, and I think that may still be the case. So it's not necessarily true that that it's just a matter of pets. But it is at the same time certainly 90% or more true that the issue that brings this to the forefront and which has been written about repeatedly in the Clarion, the Daily News Miner, the Dispatch, the Frontiersman, there are 30 stories at least written by various authors, journalists, about this problem. It is true, through the chair, that it is mostly about pets off-leash getting caught in traps.
Okay. Representative Groucher.
Thank you. Through the chair, is Nick Spiropoulos on the phone?
He is. And once the committee is finished with questions, we'll go to...
I was going to ask him a question or two in reference to what was stated. Is that through the chair, is that okay right now?
Actually, yeah, we can do that. Nick Spiropoulos, are you there?
Yes, members of the committee. This is Nick Spiropoulos, Matsu Borough attorney here. Thank you for letting me attend via teleconference. Much shorter trip.
Sure. Well, Representative Rauscher has a question for you. I'm going to invite you to give your testimony first, and I'll give you 3 minutes for that. So, at your pleasure, sir. And if you'd please again introduce
me. Thank you for letting me, again, here via teleconference. It's really a great way to be able to interact with the legislature. So that you know, I have you up on my computer here. I've got the video streaming. I've got the audio turned down so it doesn't double echo so I can see everything that's going on. As Representative Josephson said, he gave me a call yesterday, spoke with him about this bill, kind of brought my attention to it. We here at the Matsu Borough, a bunch of us were in out of town last week in Washington, D.C., so I see this bill has only been around for a couple of weeks. And looking through the bill, I did take a look at it both yesterday and last night. I actually looked online last night as well to see the materials to go with to the committee members here. This bill does grant municipalities a new power, a power that we don't currently explicitly have. I think some of the issues with talking to different lawyers may be that there are different classes of municipalities throughout the state, as most of you are aware. Specifically me, here in Matsu, we are a second-class borough, which means under Title 29 we have, enumerated powers. So we have specific lists of powers or things that have to grant us powers instead of someone like Anchorage, which operates under the opposite system, which is if the power is not taken away, generally they have it. The difference between a home rule and a general law municipality, that would be overly simplistic. So from our perspective, looking at this ordinance or looking at this proposed bill, it does add a power to the Madison Borough, one that we don't currently have, and that would be to regulate traffic. Here in Matsu, we have a very engaged mayor and assembly and manager. They have not taken up this bill, so I can't take a position on whether, Matsu would support this or not support this. All I can tell you is that it does grant us a power that we don't currently have. And I looked through the materials provided to the committee. It looks like the draft ordinance of the Matsu Borough that you have there was actually a red line marked up draft as it went through one of our advisory committees. As Representative Josephson mentioned, our local ordinance to regulate trapping on borough-owned land did pass. It's 17021. I can send a final copy of that via email to Mayor or staff. If you'd like afterwards, you can have your staff give me an email. So that you can see what our final bill actually looked like without red lines and markups if the committee's interested.
And that would be well. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that the one that's in the packet for everybody there is not quite the final version, and it has some differences there. So.
All right. And I believe that Representative Rauscher had a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, Nick, how you doing down there?
Through the chair, very well. Thank you very much.
Okay, I was wondering. I've got some questions on all this. Recently, it's my opinion. Through the chair, recently, you guys did pass an ordinance of some kind down there, didn't you, in regards to trapping?
Through the chair, yes, we did. We passed an ordinance to prohibit trapping on certain borough-owned land.
And through the chair, follow up. So I guess what I'm trying to understand here now is where would you regulate, providing this legislation was to pass, where would you regulate or be able to regulate that you cannot be able to regulate now? And the question is in regard to, you have been able to pass some legislation. So I guess I'm trying to figure out where your limitations start and end in this regard and how this would help you and what you would do with it should it pass.
So let me start with the easy one. The borough has not taken a position, and of course, you guys have all dealt with lawyers, and I'm sorry if I sound like I'm dodging, but my client is the Mat-Su Borough. The borough acts through the manager, mayor, and assembly. They have not taken a position on whether they would support this or oppose it. So your last question of what would we do is not something I can answer, because the powers that be here, the policymakers, which, you know, at our local level is, you know, I call them a mini legislature here at our assembly, the policymakers have not taken this up or decided whether they want to support it or not. What we did do here is that the borough owns land. And like any other person who owns land, we have the power to regulate our own land. So, for example, we have the power to say this piece of land is a fire station. This piece of land is a school. This piece of land is the borough central offices. And so then we have other pieces of borough land specifically for this ordinance that we passed. We had Carass Moraine Trail System, which encompasses both state-owned land, university-owned land, and borough-owned land. And in our ordinance, we regulated only the borough-owned land because it's our land, and it was our position that we get to regulate our own land. The same thing with Alcantara Athletic Complex, West Bodenburg Butte, and Lacey Mountain Recreation Area. That also has combined state and local land, but the ordinance is very clear. It's on the borough-owned portions of any of that we prohibited trapping, and then also school properties. The borough, you know, operates, the school district operates a bunch of schools here, somewhere north of 40, and the borough, the title on all those lands is in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, and so anywhere those lands exist, the school-owned lands, trapping is prohibited on those parcels as well.
Let's follow up, and thank you, through the chair. Nick, so would the difference after this legislation is passed now is, one, it still would not, you would still not be able to regulate private land, correct?
The way I read this ordinance, it would be a new power granted to the Mat-Su Borough that, or any municipality. This would be a new power granted to any municipality that says a municipality may regulate trapping within its boundaries, which means that it reads like that municipalities would be able to regulate trapping no matter who owns the land.
Through the chair, I'm actually specifying private land here right now. Would this allow you to regulate trapping on private land?
Yes, I believe that this would grant municipalities the power to regulate trapping on private land.
We also do have someone from the Department of Law on the line, and we can get someone from Ledge Legal.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, through the chair, a follow-up. Does that mean preventing trapping also, in your opinion?
Through the chair to Representative Rauscher, in the top of the second page there, it specifically specifically says that if this bill passed, municipalities would be able to put restrictions on the use of types of traps likely to cause injury or damage to persons or property. And number four, prohibitions on the setting or placement of traps in areas or locations where they're likely to cause injury or damage to persons, property, or non-targeted species. Where it says prohibitions on setting or placement of traps in areas, to me, that language would grant to municipalities the power to say, we have a giant area here or small area, whatever. We have an area here and no traps can go in it.
One more question.
If
you'll indulge me one more time. The word municipality is used here. And
yes.
I understand that there are different types of municipalities. And in your opinion, does this include all municipalities, third class, second class, first class, whatever, in your opinion?
Again, through the chair, yes, sir, it would. This proposed change is in Title 29. For us, general law municipality people, the Title 29 is kind of our Bible on, you know, making sure what we can do and what we can't do. You know, it's our rule book. And at the end of Title 29, it actually has a definition for the word municipality, and it includes any political subdivision incorporated under the laws of the state that is a home rule or general law city or a home rule or general law borough or a unified municipality. So it would include every city and borough. It would certainly include MATSU.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Unless there are any further questions for the bill's sponsor?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Representative Tallarico.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Josephson, for being here with us this morning. And while we still have the MATSU's attorney on the phone, what is this considered? I have a little bit of municipal experience, and this kind of looks like to me. I'm going to give you an assumption that the Matanuskas who sit in a borough had the ability to possibly do that on borough-owned lands because they have complete control. But does this fall into the area-wide power provisions in Title 29? And in order to do this, although it would be inserted in there, if it's an area-wide power, I think probably in home rule, first class, and second class municipalities, that's required to be adopted by a ballot measure and a vote of the people, I believe, if it was area-wide. I'm certainly no attorney. I might be mistaken, but I think area-wide powers have that requirement. I don't know if maybe you've investigated that or the person we have has.
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, I have not investigated that, and it may be that either Mr. Spropoulos or Mr. Taylor knows that. I don't know the answer.
I should have noted that Rep. Sadler and Rep. Drummond joined us some time ago. And Senator Marchicki is also present. Hello, Senator. So, Rep. Sadler, you had a follow-up.
Yes, sir, I do. Thank you. To the sponsor, through the chair, has there ever been a local ordinance that has been implemented to regulate trapping at the municipal authority level that has been challenged? In other words, has this been tested by the courts yet?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I am searching my mind on that question, and I think that the callers will know better than I will. There are a handful of local governments that do regulate trapping, and I have a list of those. And so if there were a challenge, presumably it would come from within those communities. And they are, to my understanding, Kenai, Homer, Juneau, Fairbanks, Seward, Petersburg, Nome, Valdez.
Sir, could you repeat the little story? So Kenai, Homer, Juneau, Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Kenai, Homer, Juneau, Fairbanks, Seward, Petersburg, Nome, Valdez, Anchorage, Gustavus, and Yakutat.
Thank you. And if I could follow up here, I just want to make sure that the standard defined to protect life and property is the basis for the regulations you're proposing on page 2 of your bill, mm-hmm. line 4 and 5. Could you describe the standard to protect life and property? Whose life, whose property? What's included in the definition of property?
Through the chair, I mean, I think that life would be human life, and property would include animals.
Okay, so to follow up, so if I just want to make sure I'm not reducing this to absurdity, but if a trap kills a fur-bearing animal, that is an animal life, would this law allow a local government to bar trapping because it might kill a fur-bearing animal?
I have a feeling that my aide has a thought because I saw a gesture. Do you want to put yourself on the record?
Through the chair, my name is Megan Rowe. Life would just be human life, and property is personal property. So not real, not intellectual, chattel.
Through the chair, to follow up to your name again, please.
Hello.
Megan Rowe.
Megan Rowe, okay. Would personal property include an animal?
Yeah.
And so the question I might want to follow up is, would this allow regulation to bar, would this allow a municipality to bar trapping because it might kill a fur-bearing animal?
If that fur-bearing animal was someone's property.
But yes. If it were not someone's property and it was a wild animal?
No, I don't think they could, I don't think the municipality could use the reasoning that it's life. The life in here is human life.
Okay, good. So make and other question?
A follow-up?
What was the question? Trapping. On line, page 2, line 5, there is discussion of injury to a non-targeted species. An animal that is a non-targeted species could be not a pet. It could not be personal property. But this purports to manage the taking of other non-targeted species. That's like incidental bycatch. So if someone were out trapping for marten and caught a raccoon, I don't know, this law presumes to give the municipality the right to regulate that. Isn't that the kind of power that the Board of Game reserves to itself?
I'll take a stab at this one through the chair, Representative Sadler. I think what they're referring to is the subsection C, where the departments may have to come in and eradicate pets that are rabid or wild animals that are rabid or some other eradication problem. I think that's what's being referred to.
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, on line 5, non-targeted species does not refer to incidental catch of non-targeted trapping animals, fur-bearing animals? And you can see where I'm getting to here. I'm just trying to parse closely what authority you're giving that might be construed as the Board of Game's authority to manage species targeting.
Well, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm not used to the 8 a.m. morning meeting, so I'm wondering if my aide, Ms. Rowe, has a thought. She's an attorney and a very bright one. I take your point about incidental or bycatch, and I'd have to give that some thought. I don't know.
I'm not totally sure either. Non-targeted species, I guess, it could lend itself to the municipalities trying to prohibit bycatch. Through the chair. Given that there's these other requirements, like so they could do trap tag requirements or signage, like the subsection A applies to that subsection 4. So subsection A says for the purpose of protecting life and property within its boundaries. So if they are trying to prohibit the trapping of non-targeted species, it has to be for the purpose of protecting life and property.
We have been joined by Mr. Bullard from Ledge Legal, and we also have Fish and Game and the Wildlife Troopers online. Are there any questions for any of those individuals or agencies? Representative Westlake.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. This is for Ledge Legal. Okay, you heard Representative Sadler on there asking a question on here. And hopefully you see it in front of you. And if not, I'll read it out to you. It's prohibitions on the setting or placement of traps in areas or locations where they are likely to cause injury or damage to persons, property, are non-targeted species. My question to you is this, as a trapper, is I set out traps. I'm setting them for lynx over there. We normally set them high, but sometimes you put them at bases. And rather than a lynx, I get a wolverine or, say, a wolf. Where do I stand on this? Thank you.
Through the chair, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
The prohibition that you've just asked about setting the trap, you know, preventing setting the traps low because you might get a wolverine instead of a lynx, that's not for a local government to regulate. That's squarely within the provenance of the Department of Fish and Game. Those aren't the sort of local ordinances that would be allowed by this state law. But this state law would just codify sort of the nature of municipal power to protect its local citizens and their property.
Thank you, sir.
So, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair, sir. To put a fine point on that, is page 2, line 5, the non-target species, should that come out of the bill in order to not conflict this proposed law with the authority the Board of Game has?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I think that all of this has to be read in context, that a municipality on page 1, lines 9 and 10, a municipality may regulate trapping to protect life and property within its boundaries. And it may, so under 5, where are our page? So this is a prohibition on the setting or placement in traps in certain places. And it could be that someone has a bunch of bird feeders in their yard and the municipality could regulate the placement of traps so that it's, I don't know, it would still have to protect life and property.
Follow up.
I don't know if this should come out of the bill. I mean, again, this isn't going to allow an ordinance that takes the local government into the provenance of the Department of Fish and Game. Responsibility of the state's fish and game is the department's, not the local municipalities.
So to follow up through the chair, sir, it sounds like you would agree, yes, that line 5 should come out in order to clarify and avoid that conflict. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I'm the drafter of this legislation, and when I included that, I thought it would be conditioned. It was my legal understanding that it would be conditioned that any ordinance that was adopted under 5 would have to also protect life and property. Wordsmithing is possible. It could come out. But again, I think this is just codifying what at least first-class boroughs and municipalities can do now.
Certainly. So through the chair, with all respect, wordsmithing is what we do here. So again, my question is, should that non-targeted species, those two words, come out of this?
That's the judgment of the legislature. Draft the bill that the legislature desires.
Okay, well, I'll just express for the record that in my opinion, just from the information you've shared with me, it should come out because you said that is an improper impingement on the Board of Game's authority to regulate incidental take. And I will offer an amendment to that effect when it comes time.
Representative Rauscher, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. To the chair, this one is for the attorney in the Matsu Borough. Just a curiosity, this is for now. This will now allow you to make decisions on private land as well as public land, as well as municipal land, as well as state land. How big is the Matsu Borough right now?
Again, this is Nick Spropoulos, Matsu Borough attorney here in Palmer, through the chair. The Matsu Borough is approximately 24,500 square miles.
Of control over trapping. All right, thank you very much.
Are there any further questions for the bill sponsor or yep. for the other resources we have on the line?
Yes,
Representative Sadler.
To the chair, to the sponsor. Can you speak, Representative Josephson, briefly about the standard is likely to cause injury? Who makes that determination, or can you give us any more clarification as to what that means?
Well, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think that would be a determination made by a local governing authority, whether it's a city council or borough assembly or the like. I don't know that I take your point, but I don't know that it would be easy to codify what would be likely to cause injury and what wouldn't be. I just don't know how one would do that without a code that would become Napoleonic in length, I guess.
And follow up. So, Representative Joseph, I appreciate that, and I can't expect you to know every bit of law regarding fish and game or municipalities, but just I think it's important to have that defined. Does your research in support of this bill ever come across a standard likely to cause injury anywhere else in state law?
Through the chair, I haven't seen that in the research.
Sure.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I'm reading this correctly, this bill, should it be enacted, says that a municipality may regulate trapping. It doesn't say they shall, but they may, should they so choose. And where does it say they may? They may regulate trapping on private property.
Well, through the chair, I think because it's Representative Drummond, because it's within their boundaries, that would include a person. That could include obviously private inholdings, and in the Metsubara there would be many. I would note that there are people who think that that can't possibly stand, but of course, no one, even though a home is a castle in the proverbial sense. Everyone's home is, not everyone's, but it's very sort of regulated anyway, whether they're aware of it or not. The criminal code applies, marital codes can apply, the divorce code applies. I mean, it's, for example, a person could own a grove of trees, a massive grove and an acre of land, and a borough could say, you can't take all those down. And it might have a legitimate public purpose why it would say that, and that purpose might be binding. So I don't mean to imply that people don't have liberty and freedom, but there's more sort of control of those things by local government than people may realize.
Follow up,
yeah, and I agree. And if the municipality of Anchorage does have exactly that rule. You don't take down a grove of trees unless you're ready to develop the land, because what happens is all of a sudden you've got dirt and dust blowing around and drainage issues and so on and so forth. But I guess I'm imagining a subdivision with lawns and no fences, and somebody is upset with their neighbor's dog that runs loose and decides to set a trap, just to lay a trap out on their front lawn. And I imagine that would be, since it's easily accessible to small children and other creatures, that would not be permissible behavior in a municipality.
Well, through the chair, Representative Drummond, I mean, it begs the question about the purists who believe that if a dog's off leash, then perhaps the dog owner is the one who's violating the law. But there is no law that says, as a matter of policy, that the ultimate price of the loss of the dog's life is an acceptable price. So it's the sort of thing that makes me think about that. And more specifically, your example is something that I think is known to happen.
I believe it has. Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess anyone who thinks this is a solution in search of a problem really needs to simply enter trapping and trails in any of the major newspapers in the state of Alaska, and you will have many hits. And this is an ongoing problem, and it's not going to go away. And as you said, Representative Drummond, this allows essentially, it's sort of an opt-in. Mm-hmm. And as drafted by Mr. Bullard, with my guidance, or mutually looking at this, I think that it approaches those things that under Title 29 local governments can legitimately do as local governments, without infringing on the Board of Games prerogative.
We have...
I'm fine.
Oh.
I'm fine at this point, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. We have Representative Tallarico and Representative Rauscher, and then Representative Sadler. I would ask you, gentlemen, if you'd be willing to hold your questions so that we can go to public testimony. I see that we've got several people online, and I'd be interested in having their giving them a chance to testify first. And if you could stick around until after the public testimony, we can resume questioning of the
Actually, Mr. Chair, I would appreciate the chance to get my question answered. Won't be long.
Very well. Representative Rauscher, Representative Tallarico, would you be willing to wait for the public testimony?
Are folks going to hang online, legal folks?
Yes.
That's fine.
Yes, I expect they will.
I have no problem.
Thank you.
Then I'll be brief. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, just to put an end point on, I guess, your views on where trapping should be allowed and when trapping should be allowed.
Through the chair, my views or potential municipalities' views?
Yours.
So mine as an individual?
Yes.
All right. Well, through the chair, I mean, I actually woke up thinking about that. So I guess I'm prepared to answer. I think that there should be lots of trapping availability in the state of Alaska, lots and lots of it. I think that, I mean, in my perfect world, it would not necessarily happen on some federal lands where federal land managers thought it was not in the public interest. But my opinion is not prevailing in that respect, and the president just signed something that runs counter to that. I do think that local governments, I think that there are a lot of interests from dog mushers, and I know, for example, in the Bethel community, that dog mushers, which we tend to as a culturally associate with trapping effectively, that they have had entanglements literally and figuratively with traps. And so dog mushers are impacted by this, dog walkers, I'm sure bicyclists to the extent they have off-leash dogs, which they would. No one would generally have a leash dog and bike with that dog. And cross-country skiers, other trail users. There's a huge number of Alaskans that do, backpackers, they do the activities I've just identified. There are thousands of these people. And I think that their rights, there's an imbalance there because, as I said, the traps sort of control the turf when they're placed. So the answer to the question, Representative Sadler, is that were I king for a day, the traps would be moved off publicly identifiable and maintained trails by a good 100 to 200 feet. But the Resources Committee largely disagreed with my belief. But what they didn't disagree with was that local governments need more authority over this question. In fact, they were sort of insistent in a bipartisan way. And so that's what this bill's about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Of course. And Representative Drummond, would you be willing to hold your question until after public testimony?
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. We'll now go to Jen Rentmore in Skagway. Jen, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Skagway is one of the communities that grappled with this issue, and I believe it was 2015 we passed an ordinance which, on our attorney's guidance, was kind of grounded in the borough's ability to regulate public safety within the borough boundaries. And I think... Excuse me. I think this bill is an excellent bill because it gives some clarification to what many municipalities are already doing which is regulating where trapping can happen. Our community dealt mainly with setbacks. We wanted certain setbacks off certain in certain areas. They also designated a huge rural area in which setbacks from traps were from trails were much smaller in the big rural areas. But in and around the community and on the major recreational trails, I think as I pulled this up on my computer, trapping is prohibited within 50 yards of any public street, road, right-of-way, or highway, or established marked trail within the boundaries of the Skagway Borough, unless the area is designated rural trapping area, as per paragraph B. And then in the it defines these large tracts of land that are rural, and the setback then is only 25 yards of any public street, road, right-of-way, or highway. This was never an issue because the old timers went way out. They never brought their traps to town, but there were two or three guys who moved in and decided they were going to trap right in the community. We have a small area on our valley floor, if you're familiar with Skagway, some little parks. They were in our little parks. On our most used trails, they were setting traps in cemeteries. It was kind of like we can go anywhere we want. And so the community kind of rose up against that and said, no, we need to define where they can go. I like this bill because it does give the municipalities the ability to only the people in the municipalities know which are the favorite trails. Fish and Game was not helpful because they don't understand the recreational side of it. They just want to manage the game populations. And so I think this is a really good bill. It's going to give the municipalities the ability to determine exactly what fit is works for them and what areas they're concerned about.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Rentmore. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
We will be going next to Neiland Taylor in Anchorage. Mr. Taylor, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Please give your name and your testimony.
So my name is Neiland Taylor, and I'm a resident of Anchorage. I've lived here for 42 years, and I've been involved with this issue of dogs getting trapped at trailheads and on popular trails for about 20 years now. I very much support this bill, and I very much believe that it's necessary because the entire legal question of a municipality's authority to regulate the placing of traps is murky. I'm an attorney, and I was retained by Lynn Mitchell and her group up in the Matthew Borough, which was pushing for some sort of ordinance, which ultimately has been enacted. And I did prepare a couple of legal opinions for Lynn Mitchell and her group, and I also was on a Board of Game subcommittee about 15 years ago, which looked at trapping, placing of traps near trails and near trailheads near Anchorage in the northern portions of the Kenai Peninsula and basically Unit 14C, which is right around Anchorage. What I've run into is basically, on the one hand, and I supported House Bill 40, which Representative Josephson spoke about, and there was quite a few comments saying, well, it should be local, it should be local, and up to the municipalities to make these decisions. But when we were advocating, or the group was advocating up in Matsu Borough, the proponents of trapping basically said, you don't have the authority, and you don't have the authority, and frankly, it's very mixed and it's murky. And so I very much support it because because it would be nice from those of us who would like to see restrictions on the placing of traps right at trailheads and right on trails, we'd like to see some setbacks. And that really is what I see as the purpose of this bill, is to provide setbacks so that these heavily used recreational areas are not filled with traps, or they're not trapped in them. In terms of long-term standing problem, I mean, basically for 20 years, I've been following the issue and working on it, and there are dozens and dozens and perhaps hundreds of cases, dogs getting caught in traps right on or right next to trails. And clarity would be helpful to those of us who would like to see restrictions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Taylor. Are there any questions from committee? Representative Westlake.
Yes, thank you. And through the chair. Sir, I heard you said you had been an attorney. How will this bill change what you can do now? Thank you.
It would give municipal governments in the state of Alaska express authority to regulate the placing of traps near trailheads and near trails, and I assume other, you know, designated sites like public schools. It is not clear that municipalities have that authority now, and one comment made by Representative Drummond, which I want to emphasize, is that municipalities may regulate the placing of traps. It doesn't require it. It just says that they may, and what this bill does is say that if they do regulate the placing of traps within the confines of this bill, then they have the authority to do that. If it's not something that will then be litigated for, you know, a long period of time. And it's the threat of litigation and it's the complexity of it all that the groups that I associate with run into. And so that's why it's necessary to clarify it, so that if a group like Lynn Mitchell's group up in Matsu wants to have some limits on the placing of traps, the borough or the municipality would have the authority beyond just borough-owned land. It would also include near trails on state-owned land and also near trails on federal land, where it would at least give the borough the fighting chance of surviving a lawsuit if it, you know, there was some conflict between federal authority and local authority.
Thank you, sir.
We have another question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Taylor, I appreciate you coming online. And I want to make sure and give the folks testifying in support of this bill the opportunity to make clear, if that's the case, that they're not anti-trapping in all locations or in all situations, but it's concerned about the police powers of a local municipality. So, Mr. Taylor, what is your general views on the practice of trapping in Alaska?
I do not oppose all trapping in Alaska, but I would like to see restrictions on trapping in densely populated areas. I'd like to see restrictions on the placement of traps near trails and near trailheads. But no, I do not oppose all trapping in Alaska. A long time ago, I entertained some of those views, but I've gotten older and wiser and changed those views.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Taylor? Seeing none, thank you again, Mr. Taylor, for your testimony. We'll be going next to Mr. Al Barrett in Fairbanks. Mr. Barrett, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I do not support this bill. I think using terminology that's interpretive is very dangerous. I think if you would take a map of Alaska and have the overlay of all the municipalities and boroughs that are on that map, you'd see how large and how encompassing these governors have on Alaska, and this bill would start to infringe on subsistence. Almost every municipality or borough has subsistence areas in their boundaries, and a law like this would infringe on the subsistence activities and not meet all of the 8 criteria that are granted to protect subsistence, which is the highest use. I believe, you know, like the Fairbanks North Star Borough doesn't have policing powers, so I don't see how something like this could be enforced. Generally, from what I've read and what I've been told by Alaska wildlife troopers, is they don't really enforce ordinances. That's why they don't write tickets for people that have dogs off their leash and in violation of a municipality's ordinance. There was some documentation on this proposed bill stating an attorney general's opinion from 1982 that the Board of Game doesn't have the authority to regulate safety. Since that memorandum has been out in 82, probably about 83, the Board of Game adopted, or the legislature adopted, new language giving the Board of Game authority under 1605, 255, 11, that the taking of game to ensure public safety is now is codified. There's places like Kramer's Field in Fairbanks, which is within this boundary, that allows trapping that's regulated, you know, through the Board of Game and the department. And you could have a municipality take that away. And so I'd have a few other things, but I think we shouldn't support this bill. This cookie cutter, one size fits all for all municipalities, is a wrong way to go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Barrett. I'll submit to the members of the committee that we do have Hazel Nelson, the director of the Subsistence Division, online as well.
Okay.
But I see that we have some questions from the committee for Mr. Barrett.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Barrett, thank you very much for your testimony. I very much appreciate that. But I would ask you why you believe that this would lead to one cookie-cutter situation for the entire state, when clearly I think the reading of the bill says that each municipality would get to, A, choose if they regulate it or not, and, B, would get to choose what regulations they put. I would worry the exact opposite would be true, that you could be going from municipality to municipality and not have any idea of what the trapping laws are in that region.
Mr. Baird, if you're still online, would you please introduce yourself again and reply?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't quite understand what the question was. Could you state that again for me, please?
Representative Pensler?
I'm wondering why you believe that every municipality would enact the exact same laws throughout all of them. I think the purpose of this bill is to allow municipalities to have options. So you seem to intimate that we would have large swaths of the state regulating in the exact same way, and I don't gather that's from this bill, since it gives local control to local municipalities. So why is it your thought that is the way this would shake out?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative. I agree with that. You're correct in that opinion, and maybe my terminology of a cookie cutter was wrong. But what could happen is, you know, like the Fairbanks North Star Borough butts up against the Denali Borough, and you'd have two different sets of ordinances, and a trap line that's running through there would have two sets of regulations on that trapper. And again, because these are, you know, subsistence areas that this would be part of, you know, you're taking that ability, you're restricting that subsistence opportunity of economy of effort by, some municipality putting restrictions on setbacks or size of traps. And you know, it's really disturbing. I'm glad Representative Westlake pointed out that, the non-targeted species issue. Because I, as a trapper, you know, I set a marten pole set. You know, I catch, you know, gray jays in it, you know, which is a non-targeted species. I don't intentionally try to catch a gray jay or a squirrel, but it happens. And, you know, a body assembly could, you know, say, well, you're likely to catch a non-targeted species with that marten pole set, so we're going to restrict that.
Thank you. I think that spoke very clearly to it.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. I see that
the bill's sponsor has something to say.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My aide reminds me that there are different regulations from Board of Game unit to unit already. There are different there are subunits within each game unit that have separate regulations as to methods and means, et cetera. So the idea that we couldn't possibly tolerate this because the Fairbanks North Star Borough might want X while the Denali Borough wants Y is, I think it's sort of rings hollow a little bit. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. And Mr. Barrett, if you'd like to, or actually I think Representative Sadler, you were waiting
yes, sir.
For the question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Barrett, could you first of all, could you state your full name, please? I'm not sure what's your first name, last name.
Through the chair, Representative, my name is Al Barrett, and I reside in Fairbanks.
Gotcha. Thanks, Mr. Barrett. And secondly, would you repeat the citation of state law that you said that in the aftermath of the 1982 Attorney General's opinion, you said that there was some action in 1983 that is reflected in 1605, and what's the subsection?
That's 1605-255, which is the Board of Game Management Requirements, and it's number 11, the taking of game to ensure public safety. And that's a little bit interpretive, too, because you could probably argue that public safety is, you know, human safety and not private property.
Okay. And I guess I'd ask if you know of any place in state law where there is a definition of the standard of likely to cause damage. Likely to cause injury.
You broke up a little bit. Could you repeat that?
Certainly, sir. I'm just wondering if it sounds like you have some knowledge of trapping laws. Looking at page 2 of this bill on line 4, there's a statement, are likely to cause injury. Do you happen to know of any place in state statute where there is established a standard for likely to cause injury?
Through the chair, Representative, I don't know that right off. I haven't seen that anywhere in the codified.
Fair enough. You're not understood as an expert on it. Just wondering if you haven't. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And seeing no further questions from the committee, I'll thank you again, Mr. Barrett, for your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we'll have Bruce Weber, followed by Corey Giacomazzi. Mr. Weber, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you for your patience, sir. I see you've been waiting nearly an hour. If you'd please introduce yourself and give your testimony.
My name is Bruce Weber. I live in Skagway. About 3 or 4 years ago, it came to my attention that at the end of the road of our subdivision, someone was setting traps. And I did some research to see what kind of regulations either the municipality or the state had in place for placing traps, and there were none. And I was kind of amazed that there were no regulations whatsoever. And I began the process of the municipality, where I pushed for the municipality to adopt some regulations saying where trapping could be and where trapping shouldn't be. And that was my whole impetus, not to end trapping. I do believe that there are places where trapping should occur, but I do believe there are lots of places where it shouldn't occur. And I think the number of municipalities and boroughs that have adapted legislation delineating where trapping can occur and where it shouldn't occur is indication of the need for this piece of legislation. And so I would have I'm very much in favor of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Weber. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for taking the time. We're moving next to Corey Giacomazzi. If you'd please introduce yourself and give your testimony. Uh, Corey, whose name I am failing to pronounce quite correctly, Giacomazzi, are you there? We'll check. Apologies for the delay. It looks like we have lost Corey Giacomazzi. We will now return to question. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We've been joined by Kenny Barber in Butte. Kenny, would you like to introduce yourself and give your testimony?
Yeah, my name's Kenny Barber. I live in Palmer, Butte. I'm against this. I think that it's wrong to give the municipalities the right to close trapping on private lands, and this is what I understand. I just heard about this today. Furthermore, I think that this whole thing is getting blown out of proportion by people saying that people are trapping close to their homes. Some of it might be, but I think some of it has to do with dogs in general. And as far as safety goes for people, I don't know of any person ever been caught in a trap or been harmed in a trap in the state of Alaska, unless it was a trapper himself who messed up. So I just think that it's wrong for the state to give the municipalities the right to, whatever you want to say, tell people they can't trap on public, on private lands that people own. And not only that, how is the Board of Game and the state of Alaska going to control this thing from getting out of hand with the Board of Game? Doesn't make much sense to me, but that's all I have to say on it. So thanks for letting me testify.
Of course, Mr. Barber. Representative Rauscher has a question for you.
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, I was just wondering, is there a Board of Game, Fishing Game, or anybody here today?
We have online a wildlife trooper. We have someone from Fish and Game, and we have the director of the Subsistence Division, as well as a member of the Department of Law.
Through the chair, then, he's brought up a point here with regards to Fish and Game here, and I was just wondering what's their view on this?
Well, we can certainly go to them. First, I would like to see if there are any questions directly for Mr. Barber. Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony, Mr. Barber. And feel free to email any further thoughts to the committee.
Okay, thank you.
And now we will return to questions from the committee for the resources which we have online.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, my aide Megan Rowe has more recently gone to law school than I have, and she reminds me that the term that Representative Sadler noted, the likely to cause injury, does ring a bit with the common law on recklessness. So it sort of sounds in that area of law, and that may be a place to investigate a little bit more.
Through the chair, I believe, this is Megan Rowe, I believe if you look in Title 11 in the definition section under criminal law, you'll find a definition of reckless that has that same wording, that likely to cause injury. And maybe Councillor Bullard could lend some insight into this, but I think that's why we chose that language, is because it's been defined in common law and it's defined in statutes.
And thank you, Ms. Rowe. Representative Josephson. Representative Rauscher, did you have a question to direct to one of our resources?
Yeah, I'll restate the question. Thank you, through the chair. I was just wondering, what is the what's Fish and Game's position on this? There's subsistence regulations out there. There's all kinds of regulations that we have involving trapping as a sport, trapping as a hobby, trapping as a livelihood, trapping as a way of subsistence, trapping as a way of feeding your family. I was wondering how this may be viewed by them and how this actually can commingle, I guess, with regards to that department.
Thank you for the question. Representative Rauscher, we will go first to the Director of Subsistence, Hazel Nelson. Director Nelson, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This is Hazel Nelson, Director of Subsistence Division, and I've been listening to you since you began this morning. I appreciate hearing the public testimony and your questions. While I don't have, I'm sorry to say, all the answers to help you resolve this, I can certainly say the department would have concerns about the language. And to the extent that we don't know where this legislative language will lead in regard to complications or confusions between enforcement laws, statutes for managers of wildlife, statutes for trapping, and the extent to which municipalities would have legal authority. There are confusions that would have to be clarified. So that's the extent to which I could say for certainty we would have concerns.
Are there any further questions for Director Nelson? Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair. Is that the only department that could chime in on this?
Well, certainly not. We also have Mr. Dale, whose department is not specified. Whose division is not specified, but who is from the Department of Fish and Game.
Division of Wildlife, I think.
Division of Wildlife. Mr. Dale, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. My name is Bruce Dale. I'm the director for the Division of Wildlife Conservation for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Excellent. Do we have any questions for Dale? Representative Rauscher.
My follow-up, I guess, would be to ask these departments how they view this and how this could interact within the regulations that they've already have established within their departments and their across the state of Alaska. And what happens is I've noticed in the past that some of these people are available to us, but we never really ask them during the committees. And I would just want to make sure that we have vetted this properly through all these departments. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dale, I believe you're being asked to weigh in on the merits of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The department doesn't have a position on this bill at this time. There's some questions about who would enforce this bill that I believe Major Bernard Chastain is on the line as well. I just wanted to point out, though, that most – or many, at least, of the municipalities' regulations are actually Board of Game regulations. For example, there's a prevention for trapping. There's in Anchorage. There's also an ordinance, but it refers to, I believe, negligence, and that's the prohibition, whereas there's just a complete ban on trapping within Anchorage. And same thing with Fairbanks. That's a Board of Game regulation. And some of the smaller communities, like Skagway has been mentioned, do have ordinances, local ordinances, and Kenai, I believe, is Board of Game regulation.
So, through the chair.
Follow up.
So, I guess I need some clarification. Some districts, some municipalities have this ability and some don't already without this. Is there something I'm missing here? Or am I incorrect in my statement?
Mr. Bill?
Through the chair, that would be a better question for the Department of Law, who's also on board. I think the ability to regulate their own land is what has been established as they have, but they can't regulate all lands within the municipal boundaries.
Through the chair.
Follow up.
So then have they been given the power to do this through Fish and Game? Is that my understanding?
That would have to be through statute in the legislature.
I guess I'm confused.
The Board of Game, of course, can regulate in any lands in the state.
If you would like to pursue this with the Department of Law, we do have Cheryl Brooking on the line.
Yes.
Ms. Brooking, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rauscher, if you'd be so good as to restate your question.
I guess I'm a little confused on how some communities do have the ability to regulate this and have done so, and some say they can't because they don't have that ability.
Through the chair, some municipalities have adopted ordinances that are not particularly valid, and I don't know what level of enforcement that they have. And that's similar to some of the state statutes that we have on the books that the court has ruled them to be invalid, but they still stay on the books. On the other hand, there are examples where the Board of Game has adopted regulations, and I will use the city and borough of Juneau as an example. There were certain areas there that were heavily used by a variety of different users, and these people all got together, all types of users, and they came to the Board of Game with a proposal to regulate where traps could be set in these heavily used trail areas. And with that kind of consensus, the Board of Game adopted state regulations, and so the municipal regulations that are on the books mirror the ones that were adopted by the Board of Game. So what people have been saying is correct, is that right now the municipalities don't have the authority to regulate hunting or trapping, but like the Mat-Su Borough did, the borough regulated whether or not traps can be placed or where they can be placed on borough-owned lands. So this bill is a little bit different. It on its face would allow the municipality to regulate all trapping, not just the placement of traps, within their boundaries, including state, federal, borough. It appears to also include university and railroad lands, although I'm not real clear on that.
Ms. Brooking, would you please restate your name for the record?
This is Cheryl Brooking, and I'm with the Alaska Department of Law in Anchorage.
And one more follow-up. She did mention the word federal. So are we giving permission for federal consents on the ability to do federal land also?
Ms. Brooking?
Yes.
I believe I will now officially close public testimony unless there's anyone in the room who wishes to testify. Seeing none, public testimony is closed.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if it's possible to still ask a question of Ms. Hazel Nelson.
It is. Representative Sadler. Director Nelson, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Nelson, Mr. Barrett raised the question of whether the Board of Game has authority to regulate taking of game for police purposes in 1605-255-11. I guess I'd like to ask you, in your position, you've got some responsibility for game activities. Have you any understanding of the of how that statute has been interpreted to apply to the right of municipalities the state to regulate taking a game for police purposes to ensure public safety? I guess what I'm asking is, have you seen that statute enforced for any particular purpose?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I need to defer that question to the Department of Law.
Okay. Then I would offer that question to Ms. Brooking.
Very well. Ms. Brooking, if you would please restate your name and affiliation for the record and respond to the question. Representative Sadler, if you'd be so good as to restate your question.
Certainly. Through the chair, Ms. Brooking, to your knowledge, has AS 1655-255-11 ever been applied and enforced? And if so, can you tell us the circumstances?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, Yes, the Board of Game responds to proposals that are presented by anyone who wants to submit a proposal. So the overriding goal of the Board of Game and their directive is to regulate for the conservation, utilization, and development of the resource. And in doing that, they can also address public safety concerns. And so in that regard, they address areas where there are there's overuse and conflicts, and those address certain public safety concerns. They also have regulations that allow the take of an animal in defense of life and property, and that's a public safety concern. So, yes, I am not thinking of a particular factual instance right now. Perhaps Bruce Dale could help with that. But in terms of regulations, yes, the Board of Game generally considers public safety aspects as part of its role in regulating the conservation, utilization, and development of game resources.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up?
And this kind of goes to the crux of the question right here, Ms. Brooking. Has the Board of Game ever regulated the taking or use or management of non-game animals under the public safety authority?
Through the chair, the Board of Game does not regulate non-game animals. Domestic animals are outside of the board's authority.
Thank you.
It is my thank you, Ms. Brooking. It is my intention to conclude this round of discussion at 9:30. So I would like to give all the representatives another chance to reply. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while we have the Department of Law or anybody online, is this a simple question, but it won't be simple, I'm sure. When we do something like this, we put it into Title 29. I don't see this as being an actual power, and I would assume that the municipalities would have to adopt a power in order to engage this, which would be public safety. I don't think it fits under land regulation or solid waste or education. So is this a standalone thing? Would they have to adopt another power? Will it also require the adoption of powers, I think, in home rule, first and second class boroughs? I believe requires a ballot initiative, or it has to be voted on amongst the people, and it also has to fit. It can't just be willy-nilly. It has to go somewhere in a borough code. I know it seems like they don't have codes, but they all do, and they monitor them very closely. So is this standalone power? Does this have to fit under public safety? Could it be put in land use regulation?
Ms. Brooking?
Through the chair, this bill, as it's written, appears to be within the public safety power. So it's actually unclear to me whether the borough would need to adopt that or somehow have that power. The bill also seems to apply to all municipalities, cities, and boroughs, regardless of what class they are throughout the state. So I'm a little unclear on that. I don't really have an answer for you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson.
Thank you, and through the chair, I'd like to thank the representative for bringing this to our attention. As you know, I'm all about local authorities out here. And with that in mind, and hearing that, you know, some of these places probably couldn't fund enforcement, this is going to you, Ms. Brooking, because this concerned me, and with permission of the chair, I'd like to read something out here. Right. Now, the dateline is March 22nd. This is 21 days ago in Oregon. Cyanide trap kills dog, injures boy. Report. A teenage boy playing fetch with his dog set off a cyanide trap Thursday that killed a dog and injured the boy. The trap had been placed in an Idaho field by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to kill coyotes. I won't say the boy's name. He was 14, told the East Idaho News he saw the device, called an M44, and wasn't sure what it was. I see this little pipe that looks like a sprinkler sticking out of the ground, he said. I went over and touched it. Then it made a pop sound and it spewed orange gas everywhere. That orange gas was sodium cyanide, which killed Canyon's, the boy's Labrador retriever. The boy said he used snow to wash the chemicals from his own eyes before he could run home to summon for help for the dog. The incident occurred just 10 minutes from his home. And I'm going to stop there, but Ms. Brooking, when we look at these things that happened just 21 days ago somewhere, and the kid's only 10 minutes from his home, is there a way we can stop certain traps like this on doing these things legally? Thank you.
Ms. Brookings?
The chair, this is Cheryl Brooking. I don't believe that, I'm not familiar with that particular instance. I don't think that occurred in Alaska, and that type of trapping by a private trapper, I don't believe is allowed under Alaska regulation.
Yeah, and I do apologize. Follow up through the chair.
Follow
up. Ma'am, yeah, this was in Idaho, and this is 21 days ago, but we certainly wouldn't want to see something like this happening in Alaska, so I thank the sponsor over here for doing these. Is there a way through laws here we can regulate traps like this, if you will?
Through the chair, under the current law, anyone can make a proposal to the Board of Game, and I use the example of what Juno did earlier. And if you come to the Board of Game, you can submit your proposal, and it will be considered. The deadline for proposals is at the end of this month for proposals that are within their certain. They have a regulatory cycle for different types of proposals.
Thank you, ma'am.
The last question will go to Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who can address this question, but the municipality of Anchorage is roughly 2,000 square miles, and it includes the bulk of Chugach State Park, which is roughly 780 square miles. I assume that should this bill become law, that the Fish and Game would still have jurisdiction over what goes on in Chugach State Park, which borders on the municipality of Anchorage, noting that 300,000 people live in Anchorage, 738,000 people live in Alaska, and Anchorage's municipal square mileage is 0.3% of Alaska's area. And as a former assembly member, I know that the municipality of Anchorage would take this charge very seriously and move very carefully before they move to use this law locally. But would not, my question is to any of the experts online, would not Fish and Game continue to have jurisdiction over trapping in Chugach State Park?
I will send that question to Mr. Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please give your name, affiliation, and proceed.
Bruce Dale with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation. I would like to further defer that to Major Bernard Chastain from Alaska State Troopers.
Thank you, Director Dale. Major Chastain, are you with us?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bernard Chastain. I'm the Deputy Director for the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. The Alaska Wildlife Troopers are the state law enforcement agency that are responsible for enforcing the statutes and regulations for hunting, fishing, trapping statewide. My purpose today for being on the phone is simply to advise on enforceability. The department does not have a position on the bill other than the enforceability. It's important for everyone to know, as has already been mentioned, the Alaska Wildlife Troopers are state law enforcement. We enforce state law. We do not enforce city or municipal code. And this is important because some of the boroughs and municipalities are large areas that extend outside of the general city limits. And so the enforcement then falls to the police agency responsible for that area within the city limits. Outside of the city limits, in a borough situation, that enforcement then falls to, if there's a borough enforcement officer for wildlife or for any type of wildlife complaints. Some boroughs have those around the state. Some boroughs do not. And the area outside of the city limits would be responsible for those municipal codes by those officers.
Thank you, Major Chastain. Being cognizant of the time, I will ask our various experts to, well, I'll thank you all for your time. And we will, next Thursday? Well, we can retake it Thursday. We'll take up this bill again Thursday, and I would ask ask for our various experts to return with us then. We will set this aside for now in order to take up SB 64. Thank you again to Representative Josephson, Megan Rowe.
Thank you for your generous time.
Of course. Senator Michicki, if you would please come forward with your staff and put yourself on record.
Thank you, co-chairs Parrish and Fansler and community members. I very much appreciate you hearing this bill this morning. Senate Bill 64 is the Uniform Environmental Covenants Act. Essentially, I don't accept legislation lightly. What this does is it passes my test of kind of streamlining and removing obstacles that inhibit business, commerce, and the transfer of property. Senate Bill 64 helps with all of those issues without reducing expectations for public health, safety, and a healthy environment. This creates the Uniform Environmental Covenants Act, and essentially what it does, it protects the buyer and seller of contaminated property while allowing the fullest and best use of the property until the contamination reaches safe levels. It's voluntary. It's specifically a recordable interest in real estate that will be tracked in the DEC database. Notice there's a zero fiscal note. The database exists, but it's specific to the risks at a particular site and restricts activities that could result in exposure while allowing other uses to occur. So I'll tell you a little story. A piece of property in my district, a very beautiful piece of property, has some contamination. The mom and pop that own the piece of property can't afford the cleanup, but there are interested parties that would like to turn this beautiful multi-acre piece of property on the Kenai River. If you've driven through Soldotna, you've seen this piece of property, and they can't afford the cleanup, but the interested party can easily afford the cleanup. So what this bill does is it allows the contamination to be recorded on the deed of the property. The new owner can come purchase the piece of property, do the cleanup. Once the cleanup satisfies the standards that exist today in DEC, the DEC can release that covenant from the piece of property. So it protects the buyer, makes an easier sale, protects the seller so that they're aware of the contamination on the property. And, again, it's a voluntary process. They can continue with the way that it's currently done through institutional controls. But this eases the sale through a formal recording on the deed itself. I'll tell you a second story. When this is a piece of property in Anchorage, the buyers were unaware of contamination on the property. They did some dirt work. What could have easily been a relatively low-cost cleanup, they weren't aware of the contamination. They spread the soil all over their property. It contaminated the abutting properties, and now they're on the hook for all of that cleanup. So had this been in place and they had been aware of the contamination, it could have been recorded. They may have still purchased the property. They may have had a $20,000 or $30,000 cleanup instead of a several hundred thousand dollar or potentially millions of dollars of cleanup that is now in place. So it's a simple bill. When it passed the Senate 19-1, I said it wasn't a sexy bill, but the Senate president said yes, but it does have a great personality. And we do believe it. Certainly like to see it come across. We know of many pieces of property that can benefit from this. Currently, the contaminated sites, there are thousands in the state of Alaska. The only opponent to this bill is the federal government. They own 51% of the contaminated sites in the state. If you remember the Legacy Well, or it was nicknamed Travesty Wells by the legislature, we believe they should live up to the same environmental expectations of the residents of this state. So it's the only opposition we have. The rest is all support, and we hope you can support the bill. Rachel Henke is here, and she can certainly help if you need any more details or sectional analysis of the bill.
I saw one question from Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, through the chair. Senator, through the chair, I was just wondering, what is in place now? In other words, is there a regulation that you need to declare some kind of contamination at all on your property statewide, or is that within the municipalities, or not at all? And I guess, are you allowed to sell a piece of property right now without this regulation, identifying it to the next buyer?
So I have Kristen Ryan here. I don't want to get into the legalities of how DEC works on this. If you are unaware of contamination of your property, or if it's on a personal piece of property, you're not required to disclose it. This is once contamination has been identified on your property. She can explain institutional controls and how they're used today. I'd rather that she take up those questions when we get to Ms. Ryan.
We have a question from Representative Westlake.
Actually, more a comment, Senator Michicki. I really appreciate this. As someone in another life over here doing this, due diligence turned up the same thing, so I really appreciate what you've done here. So I just wanted to express that.
Thank you, Representative Westlake.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Likewise, I've got a constituent over on Weir Drive who's got the same kind of situation, and I'd like to ask him how this might apply. But my question to the sponsor is there any cost? What is the cost to create this kind of covenant, if any? And then is there any sideboards to say that we might give a covenant regarding, the, for example, gasoline or diesel contamination, but does not cover lead if it was an old car battery or gas station, for example?
If it's thank you, through the chair.
Sure.
If it is contamination that it requires cleanup through DEC, then it would be covered under this bill. Again, it's voluntary if you decide to do a covenant. My interest is that, my personal interest is that it eases in that transfer of property to the next owner. So instead of DEC requiring cleanup prior to or having other controls, it actually freely allows the new buyer to take on the liability of that contamination if they choose to do so. Again, someone who may be in a very different financial situation that really wants to develop that piece of property, and it formally records that. And, sometimes the contamination reaches safe levels through time.
Mm-hmm.
So one example that I think the department may give is if you own an old filling station and the building is sound, structurally sound, and you choose to not remove it, and they know the contamination is under the station, you may choose to operate that with certain restrictions. So perhaps it couldn't be a daycare, but could certainly be an auto parts store or something, right? So it would remain on there while that new owner is using it as an auto parts store. But if they choose to use it for one of the other reasons, then they may choose to remove the building, the foundation, remove the contaminated soil, and then go back for whatever use at that point would probably no longer have any limitations whatsoever. So that was a lot of flexibility for both the buyer and seller.
And follow up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair. I've not done many real estate transactions, mostly houses or condos or apartments, that kind of thing, so I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just trying to get my head around, what if there were, if the owner of a property gets an environmental covenant, is there any limitation? They might say, well, I think there's this much contamination, at max it's going to cost $50,000 to remediate. The covenant is issued, the transaction is completed, but the new owner finds out that it's going to cost $5 million to remediate. Does this give total... does this extinguish any obligation or liability on the original seller, or are there any limitations or sideboards?
I would prefer that we ask the department that question about if there's any remaining liability from the previous owner. I think that would be something on a case-by-case basis. I believe that environmental covenant can, I think the buyer can take on a proportion of liability depending on the transaction, and until it's satisfied, would remain on the covenant. But the department would be best equipped to answer that question.
Certainly everything can be negotiated and everything can be contracted. I just, again, don't understand how that might work. And a very brief question technically before we get to the DEC person. I assume that the cost to record a covenant would be no more than recording a lien or a carpenter's lien or anything else. Is that a fair assumption?
I believe that's a fair assumption. I'm not sure if there's any cost.
Okay, good.
I was going to say no cost, but I didn't want to jump out there without that. Yes.
Are there any more questions from members of the committee for the bill's sponsor? Seeing none, thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And we'll ask Ms. Ryan, or Director Ryan, rather, to come forward.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan, and I'm the director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response. So I spoke to some of you last week in the Resources Committee about the Hillcorp spills in Cook Inlet. But today I'm here to talk about contaminated sites. As the senator has said, you know, we see this as a bill we need to help transfer property back into commerce that's been contaminated. If property is contaminated, it's considered blighted and untouchable, and it's difficult to get loans, for example. But this bill would reduce the restrictions on the property to the specific uses that we're concerned about, allowing all other uses to occur. So what we have found in other states is that frees the property for sale and makes everybody more comfortable with that transaction, the buyer, the seller, and the bank loaning the money. It's a uniform law that's been adopted. A version of it has been adopted in most states, not all states. I believe 7 are still in the works of doing so like we are. And there's some testimony from the Uniform Law Organization that explains why they proposed this and why it's been working so well in other states. As the senator mentioned, the Department of Defense has asked to be exempted from it. We don't support that. We feel they should meet the same standards as everybody else. There is not a cost, Representative Sadler, to filing the covenant. The department would take on that responsibility, and we are allowed to do that without cost. So there would be no cost to the owner of the property to put the restriction in the title. And we do this work right now. It does not change how we regulate contaminated sites. It communicates what we're already doing to buyers. That's all this is, as a transparency in land transactions legislation. It does not change how we regulate contaminated property. It just communicates those restrictions that we are currently putting on property right now and listed in our database, which isn't necessarily always accessed when people are purchasing property. So it just makes sure they're aware that's occurring when they do a title search. And I'll stop there.
I see that there are some questions. Representative Fensler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, and perhaps this would have been a better question for the senator. But in the example that we were given, and this is kind of tangential, but help clear me up on this. So in the example we were given, somebody purchased land, and there was contaminants on there. They didn't know it. This would have obviously let them have that knowledge, so it would help them, you know, to understand what they were actually purchasing. But at the time, they were under no obligation to clean up the contamination. But later, when they then spread it, they are under an obligation. Can you speak to why that is? And why wasn't the original landowner who contaminated the land originally obligated to clean it rather than do whatever they did?
Mr. Co-Chair, through the record, right now our statutes require the current owner to be responsible for contamination. So that is who we work with. If that current owner wasn't the cause of the contamination, they inherited it for some reason, their recourse is through the legal process. They would pursue the original contaminator through the court of law. That is how our current scenario is organized. And a good example is the Flint Hills refinery. We recently settled with the Koch brothers, which is the current owner of the refinery, but a lot of that contamination probably occurred when Williams owned the property. We are continuing a legal fight joined with the Koch brothers against Williams to have them contribute to the remedy. So our laws allow us or expect us to pursue the original or the person who owns the property at the time the contamination is discovered, and then they pursue the original responsible party through legal mechanisms, which can get complicated. So what happened in the scenario that the senator was explaining, we were aware of contamination. They closed the gas station down. This was on Tudor. They took out the tanks, and the petroleum contaminated dirt around the tanks. But there was enough petroleum that had leached over to a foundation of a building. And there would be no way to get that without removing the foundation of the building. So we said, you can leave that, but if you ever take that building out, you need to deal with that dirt appropriately. And what happened is the property was transferred several times. That was not communicated to the new purchaser. They pulled the foundation out. They spread the dirt in the process of that. So they are now the responsible party in our minds because they are the ones that moved the dirt. Now, had they known, they would have not moved it everywhere. But they can go to court after the original responsible party if they choose to do so. But in the way our statutes work, they're the ones that we regulate. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. Follow up. And so then there are situations that contamination happens and things don't get cleaned up. So, like, for instance, if it leaches into the foundation, and then there are just, alternatives given in that situation, is that correct?
Mr. Co-Chair, there are about 2,000 active contaminated sites right now in the state of Alaska, and as the senator said, over half are on federal property. We have about 1,000 sites where we have agreed they don't have to clean it all up for a variety of reasons. And sometimes we put restrictions on the property to protect the future. So, like the senator mentioned, you may not be able to put a daycare there. Maybe you shouldn't put a well in the plume in the North Pole for the sulfalane release at the refinery. The restriction we would use is do not put a well in. You can't put a private drinking water well in. So the restrictions, what we call institutional controls, vary depending on the contamination and where it is. And the decision to not clean it up is a joint decision made by the department and the responsible party. Our ultimate goal is cleanup. We prefer they clean up to our cleanup standards. But there are situations where that may not be reasonable.
Follow-up. To your knowledge, does this bill apply retroactively to all 2,000 sites are now going to be recorded if this bill passes, and we'll have all 2,000 sites with whoever is the land holder will have their title noting what is in there, and that will be passed down from?
Mr. Co-Chair, no, we do not plan to go retroactively. Backwards. There will be some sites, for example, the Flint Hill site, where we probably would want to establish a covenant. So on a case-by-case basis, there's some sites owned by industry in the North Slope that are very interested in this or for protection of their, liability going forward when they transfer that property. But we don't intend to go backward except on a case-by-case basis. What we do want to do, though, is stop this from occurring going forward. All the transferred land through ANCSA that was contaminated, for example. I mean, there's lots of examples in the past where people inherited land that was contaminated and they were unaware of that. So we want to stop that from occurring going forward, but we don't see ourselves digging into all of these sites that have ICs on them right now.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. So you could go backwards to all 2,000. But it'll be too time consuming, or it won't be worthwhile for some situations and things like that. Is that my understanding,
Mr. Co-Chair? Yes. I mean, we don't really have the resources to do that. But I mean, no, there'll be certain situations. If a responsible party wants it, of course, we'll honor that. Okay. But I don't see us, taking them all on.
Okay. Thank you,
Representative Sadler, then Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Ms. Ryan. Help me understand if there's the question I was asking the senator, the sponsor, if there's any value restrictions, or would an environmental covenant be an unrestricted allowance of liability, just in the situation we described about the gas station that became a sandwich shop. Would an environmental covenant have any sideboards saying that it's okay, we're going to sell this to you for whatever price, but if it turns out later that it's going to cost an awful lot more to remediate for whatever purpose, would a covenant include those terms, or is that something that would need to be negotiated as a separate part of a transaction agreement?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that would have to be negotiated between the sales transaction. It would not be part of the covenant. The covenant has no monetary interest whatsoever.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. That clarifies it.
Representative Rauscher, then Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was just wondering, would explain the process of getting off of this registry.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, we're treating it like a permit. So there would be an appeal process. If a future buyer decides the covenant is no longer necessary and restricting some use that they're interested in, they would propose to the department the covenant be modified or removed. And if we agreed with them, we would do so. If we don't agree with them, the reason I'm calling it a permit is that they would have appeal rights. So they could appeal that decision to the commissioner like they do now with our permit decisions. And as a last case scenario, they can always take us to court if they disagree. So we would be looking for people to approach us to change covenants is how the process would work.
And through the chair, just one more follow-up. Hello. You mentioned 2,000 roughly properties. 1,000 of them have 51% approximately on federal. Of the others that are left, are any of them just private homeowners?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, unfortunately, yes. Home heating oil tanks are a frequent spill problem for us.
Through the chair, then one more question. Follow up. What would be the percentage do you feel are just regular homeowners?
Representative Rauscher, I'll have to get you that information. I don't know off the top of my head. It's not the majority. I mean, I think it's around 5%.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. I think I found my answer. I was trying to find out what ICs are, and that would be institutional controls?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the chance to kind of pepper you, Ms. Ryan, with questions. In the other states that have this, are there any, I always try to ask the question, have there been developments resulting from these environmental covenants in other states that we might not see right now? Have they ever been caught up in other legal challenges or anything, or are the programs working well in other states?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, the one benefit of waiting to adopt this and letting everyone go first is we're able to learn from their mistakes. The model code was put out in 2003, so it's been over 10 years that people have been working on this. We've taken the best of all those versions that other states have adopted. In fact, the NCUSL, the organization that proposed the model code, they are now saying our version is probably the best version and that they'll amend their model code to match what we're doing. So, yes, it's working in other states. The version that we're proposing has been effective in accomplishing the goals that we're talking about.
Thank you very much.
Are there any further questions for Director Ryan? Seeing none, thank you, Director.
Thank you.
We will now open public testimony. There is no one online who wishes to testify. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. We do have Jennifer Curry from the Department of Law in Washington, D.C. online, if there are any questions for her. Seeing none. My goodness, we might be able to close or end early today. Is there any discussion or any further questions for the bill's sponsor before we conclude? Representative Rush.
Yeah. Through the chair, what's the intent today on this, to hold it over?
It is my intention to hold this bill over until Thursday.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no further questions, we will adjourn today's meeting of the community. And is there any unfinished business? Seeing none, we will adjourn today's meeting. It is 9:58 a.m.